Hello, Taurus, and welcome to Eye of the Centaur, your 2024 spring reading from Planet Waves. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your friendly neighborhood astrologer, here with a little bit of information that may help you get a sense of what you have been experiencing in a different context, a little bit of new framing. We have arrived at the end of the Eye of the Centaur series. In this project, I worked backwards exclusively, beginning in Aries, then doing Pisces, Aquarius, so forth, Capricorn, backwards. And so this is the method described by Alice Bailey in Esoteric Astrology. And she talks about how this, whether, this is, I think, open for discussion or observation, but this is treading the wheel backwards is the path of the initiate, and the initiation concludes in your sign Taurus, an eminently important sign of the zodiac, and you are under some tremendous aspects right now. This has been going on for a while, but there is going to be a culmination, I think, a major shift in the birthday season that you're now entering is going to be a major before and after moment in your life and represent a step up in the world, and also the potential resolution of some deep internal psychological material that you seem to be doing your best to work your way through, and a new role in the world that is calling you. If you are not necessarily going completely willingly, there's definitely the sense that you're being summoned to something much greater than you have previously experienced, though that sometimes can feel like Gandalf showing up at the hobbit hole of Bilbo Baggins, who probably hadn't left in, 25 years, and saying, we need a 14th person to go on this trip so that there's not 13. We'd like you to be that person, so let's go get ready. And by the way, these are my friends, the dwarves, and they went on an adventure, the adventure of Bilbo Baggins' life. And Taurians, I think, are a bit hobbit-like in your internal orientation and a sense of grounding. I mean, I think that if you could live in a building that had kind of roots into the ground or a hillside and a round door, you might opt for that at least as a part-time residence. Okay, so just to give you a sense of the total scale, how do we do this? Total scale of the energy that's brewing, and this really only includes a part of it. We're talking in reality it goes out about maybe that far further, a little bit more. So we've got 120 degree range being covered, but the heart of the matter is that along with many other things, Venus is going to be in Aries along with the node, the moon, the sun, Chiron, Eris, and retrograde Mercury in this extraordinary aspect pattern. And though this is not happening in your sign, it is happening in a very, very sensitive place in your chart. And this is the relationship of Aries to Taurus, which is kind of astrologically from the position of sun sign astrology, which is actually a fundamental form of astrology. Were I running some kind of a formal astrology program, I just might start with the sun signs because they're a template for everything else, the structure of a chart. And so I'm going to flip this over in a second, and we'll have a proper wheel oriented on Taurus. So there's all this stuff in Aries, which is the most sensitive angle in your chart, but then in your sign in Taurus, there's this conjunction of the largest planet and one of the most reactive planets, one of the most high energy planets that can kind of topple anything, basically. But it happens to respond very well when you put it together with Jupiter in your sign. And this is, at least on the exterior, the main event for you. And a place where you're looking for the expression of many things that are going on a much deeper level, or a veiled level, or a level that is a kind of frequency that is difficult to establish, all of those things which are in some way subtle or concealed or ambivalent or veiled or operating invisibly, are all going to find expression in this conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus in your birth sign. So here's how that looks when we put it into your chart. So the all of this stuff, just about all the Aries is contained in one house. And I've summarized it here with the eclipse conjunct Chiron, big event, once in a lifetime, once in many, many lifetimes. And then let me add a couple of more planets here because I need to further customize this chart for you and make sure that we're really talking about you, a picture of you. Pardon me while I use my... kind of magic eraser. I kind of do graphics the old way. Okay, so one of the most important fundamental concepts of reading a natal chart, of which we're counting this, it's your solar chart, but close enough, is the contrast between house 12, which is this kind of invisible inner life, the house of dreams, and the house of all things gone missing, and the outer life, what is expressed in the world, and how you identify, and what you think you are, and how you appear to the world, and how you express yourself. And that's your sign. That's the reference sign, house number one, which is for you, Taurus. But note how much is going on behind the scenes. That's Venus. That's the eclipse. It's a little circle. It's a conjunction with the dot filled in. That's Chiron, which is making a 9-year trip through Aries. And then Eris making a 130-year trip through Aries, now about 100 years in. And Mercury, which is retrograde. And so if you imagine taking all of this, or most of it, this, all of this, and tucking it into this little space in your chart, which is like a dimension. It's like a bag of holding from gaming, where the bag only looks so large, or you imagine a cup, but you can put 50 gallons of water in the cup and carry it around. It's only supposed to take like a pint, but it actually takes 50 gallons. That's the 12th house. The 12th is this portal into other dimensions. It is that includes your own, what Jung would have called the subconscious, the part of your mind that you're not necessarily fully aware of until you become aware of it. And oddly, though I have not been able to make sense of this in many years of contemplation, the inner realm is above the horizon, and the outer realm is below the horizon. This imaginary horizon here of the imaginary ascendant works the same way in proper natal charts. And that is one of the paradoxes of the chart. When I solve that one, I will tell you I've solved 50 others, but this one is a little persistent. But let's read it knowing what we're reading. So when there's a large collection of things in the 12th house, what you're likely to feel is pressure. The pressure feels like a bubble filling with air, and that bubble is your deep inner psyche. One of my theories of sun sign astrology is that the position of Aries in the chart describes the area of life where people strive to self-actualize. And to have Aries in the 12th is seemingly a contradiction, because Aries is expressive and has very high initiative, but the 12th is concealed, and the 12th also has a property of denial, where you might you might feel as if you'd gone missing. And yet, with all that Aries and planets going through, you know, calling your attention to them and then to where they are, it's always like you're being jarred out of any possible sleepwalking that you may have found yourself in. But that in itself is not always pleasant, because there are a lot of times when you would just rather kind of forget yourself and all of the responsibility of being a self and finding a self and actualizing a self and bringing a self in. And it's a lot of work. And the thing is that because all of this selfness is going on in house 12, a house that can often feel like it's not even there, right? The feeling, I'll give you two examples of the feeling of the 12th. While I continue to be a little OCD and clean up this chart. The 12th is the house of dreams. And so we've all had the experience of having a moving dream, a kind of transporting dream in the morning. But then you wake up and you go about your morning routine, whatever they are, you know, feed the kitty cat, feed the kids, get your lunch ready. And little bits of the dream are breaking through. It might be the feeling at first, or you might stare down at something and, you know, you see some object, a tape dispenser, and then you realize, oh, I was dreaming of a desk, so on and so on. That's the usual relationship of the 12th house to normal waking consciousness, which we would expect to find in the first house. And so you can describe it as kind of bleeding through occasionally, but when it's not bleeding through, it's existing as if in a parallel dimension that you're carrying around with you. And we've all had the feeling of carrying the dream around all day in that slightly hazy way where we're not fully conscious that it's happening. And then it can feel a little weird to say, wow, I was, you know, dreaming of, you have the feeling and you trace it to like lava and lightning or whatever, you know, whatever the symbols might be. And that's awkward to the ego. And so often the events and experiences of the 12th exist in a kind of a hazy dream world where it is possible to veil the whole thing over in denial. That's, you know, usually thought of as the prefrontal cortex waking up and trying to process everything in a rational way, which you like to do. But the affairs of the 12th are not rational. There's nothing rational about them. The affairs of the 12th have dream logic, like the song Someone Left the Cake Out in the Rain. I don't think that I can take it because it took so long to bake it. And like, what is this cake about? And it's so important. That's the dream logic. Or, you can come up with examples of where it's like, you know, if I don't get the pair of pliers to the top of the mountain and so forth, it makes no sense to the ego, which doesn't make a lot of sense of its own, but nonetheless, the dream logic is completely alien to the ego. But the challenge is that Aries is in your house of dream logic, the place where you're going to seek yourself and seek to become, actualize, grow, and experience your reality is the house of veiled, foggy dream logic. And so this creates a very tense situation for you a lot of the time, where the self that you are seeking is concealed in this house where there's constantly a fog and where it's never really tangible and where the logic is not really comprehensible. And so it's as if there's this real you that you're trying to dial in, and this that is in turn trying to dial you in. And maybe it's frustrating because you don't always make exact contact. And then when you do make contact, you can have a tremendous revelation, but they may be few and far between. But you're in one. There is one coming. And so vis-a-vis the 12th, Aries, that has been the scene of a lot of transits. And the most important recent transit, still going on for a couple of more years, is that Chiron has been moving through the 12th. And Chiron is pretty boldly the opposite of the 12th house, where the 12th seeks to obscure. Chiron seeks to focus. Where the 12th is wide and broad and general, Chiron operates in a highly specific way. Where the 12th would seek to forget, Chiron seeks to document. And so, having had Chiron running through your 12th house for approximately the last 5 years, has been tense in and of itself, in that there is the constant irritation to wake up to who you are in ways that are completely opposite your usual sense of your relationship to yourself, where you can kind of lay back and not worry about it so much. But I think Chiron in Aries for you is in the role of what you might think of as the constant ongoing irritant that is encouraging you and ensuring that you wake up to yourself and that you don't forget who you are, and that you remember other things that you have forgotten, and that you remain present for yourself. You could not want better help in this endeavor than having Chiron do this for you, because that's what Chiron does best. And as the planet associated with healing and wholeness, what is really going on is that Chiron is a probe into parts of yourself that you may not have ever accessed before, and is encouraging you to send your roots deep into yourself and to learn and grow and be aware in an ongoing, ever gathering way of who you are and who you are becoming. So because there's so much forgetting in the 12th and so much pulling the veil over the dream logic, this may be difficult for you. And it is not easy to talk about the things in the 12th house. And in fact, the things in the 12th house have a property of being somewhat unspeakable. So dream logic was the first one, right? This odd thing of the dream breaking through the day, and you get little glimpses of the logic and the characters, and you have to put it together. Another example of the 12th is a sexual experience, say the kind that might happen and be very passionate and somewhat unusual and occur at maybe 3 o'clock in the morning. And this is a time when you're normally asleep, and you may even be in a slightly hazy state, and the experience has the properties and the qualities of a dream. It is just dreamy, and you might even wonder if it's even happening. Have you had that kind of experience where it's so dreamy and unusual and beautiful and different that you might stop and say, wow, this feels like a dream. Is this even happening? And then you fall asleep and you wake up and it feels like it was a dream. That is another example of the 12th. And you can walk around through the day getting little glimpses just like you would were it a dream, and then may even be surprised to find some physical evidence that it was real, because it was, but still there's that tension. And another quality of the 12th is that it is exceedingly difficult to put into words, and that includes to put into words to yourself and the people who can hang out in their 12th house and put those thoughts, ideas, and feelings to work are generally thought to words are generally thought well and work are generally thought of as poets and songwriters. And a lot of art that you see in visual form is an expression of the 12th house. But the thing about art is that it can be, it's always symbolic in a more abstract way. And it you know, you can be making art and feel like, oh my God, this is such, you know, daring art, and that brush represents that feeling in that brush, and then I'll shake the brush at the canvas and all that and think, you've completely bared your soul. And then you hand it to someone and they're like, oh, that would make a nice birthday card. But with words, when you say things like whatever might be completely embarrassing but true, other people, when they see those words, will have a better idea of what you're talking about than just from an impressionistic painting of, or of a painting of a dream scene of some kind. And so there is some documentation possible in images, though photographs are going to work better here than painting. Painting is wonderful for expression, but photographs are wonderful for documenting. And words, particularly the kind that would not be misunderstood if they were read, and therefore might be daunting, frightening to write down, are exactly the kind of documentation that will help you thread the needle. Now, Chiron has been in Aries since 2018, then re-entered in 2019. That's a while. Why am I saying so much about it now? The reason I'm saying so much about it now is because it is coming to one of two related peaks, saving the best for last. And one peak is the solar eclipse that's going to happen April 8th. Look at this thing. They're all at 19 degrees of Aries and 24 arc minutes. So this event, a triple conjunction, is exact to no arc minutes. That's dividing the wheel into 23,000. You would think a roulette wheel, where you had to bet on three things landing in a single slot of a 23,000 slot roulette wheel, right? How many slots are in a roulette wheel? 102 or something. So now imagine a roulette wheel, you know, that has 23,000 slots, and somebody spins the thing, and you throw three objects. all moving at completely different speeds, different sizes, and they all land in the same slot. And the thing stops, and you're looking at them thinking, how the holy living fuck did that happen? But guess what? It's happening. And it's happening in your 12th house. And so there is a, to me, to my ear, now having read this thing for the 36th, the 36th time, is it's an opening. It's a portal. It's a portal into yourself. It's a portal into your own deep inner sanctuary. Now, I will say this, that we all know what a fuss I make about the properties of living in the digital age and how this is impacting us. And one of the ways it is doing so is by removing people's sense of their own inner sanctuary. Digital consciousness guts people. It strips us of our inner life. We are all spending a lot of time in front of cameras. That is strange. It used to be like, smile, gee, and then that was it. Or maybe, you know, maybe your little brother was doing a photo project and you're going to be a model for an hour. And that's it. But nope, now it's cameras everywhere in glorious profusion. They're on the street. They're at the ATM. They're in the bank. They're in McDonald's. They're in the boutique. They're in the hamburger store. They're every place. Every place you go, you're looking into a camera. And we are under the constant influence of electricity. And we're constantly sharing many of our most private thoughts that are then entered into a database, which one database. So this is not only obscuring people's sense of their privacy, it is deleting the concept from reality, the concept of not privacy as a legalistic concept, but rather privacy as a state of being, as a thing available. And we all need that interior place of contact and rest because it opens up into other very important places where there's spiritual levels of communication. But most people are having this completely made blotto. And though it is tense for you, you're in a very fortunate position to have Aries in the 12th house because it means you're always one way or another going to be called back into your inner sanctuary over and over again. And then there are going to be times when your inner sanctuary goes through a major change of some kind. And before we move on to the events and other signs, because really everything is being powered by this event in Aries, it is particularly poignant to you because Venus is there. Your ruling planet is... It could be anywhere in a fairly wide range of. It always stays close to the sun, but it could be in, I think, as far away as late Aquarius or early Gemini. I think it's 72 degree range, so that'll cover two signs and then a little edge on the end of each one. And it's in Aries. It is witness to this event. It is close to the action in this event. It is going to be crossing the degree of the eclipse fairly soon after the eclipse. That degree turns into a kind of a geyser in the chart, a fountain that will be spewing information from its dimension for the rest of your life. This degree will be sensitive to transits, and you can... see it in action. And Venus is right there. Now, there's a second event, and I mean, I could really, really go on and on about this, but I want to just wrap up the Aries part of this. this event, the retrograde of Mercury here into Taurus, into Eris, this planet with a 551-year orbit, the one that caused the demotion of Pluto, et cetera, is another nearly impossible event. And I say that because they're both in the same degree of a 360-degree wheel. Then when you divide those into 60 each, they're within 3 arc minutes of each other. This is astounding. And so they are fused into one, and Mercury is retrograde, and Eris is the thing that has been driving us out of ourselves. And Mercury is this utility of consciousness. Mercury is, as the Gita says, the mind of the creature, the consciousness of creatures. No, the mind of the senses and the consciousness of creatures. The mind of the senses and the consciousness of creatures. And that's those key words from the Bhagavad Gita that describe Lord Krishna are also key words I apply to Mercury, because it is about the locus of consciousness, the mind of the senses. Now, there's another point here called Amor. That's it. It's an asteroid. Not the world's most important asteroid, but it is very important because it is conjunct the Eris-Mercury retrograde conjunction within 1/4 of a degree. And Amor represents the conditions placed on unconditional love. And ultimately in life, no matter how we may judge ourselves, we have no choice but to accept ourselves, and people who don't accept themselves can be in tremendous conflict and also lack an ability to grow and change. And Amor describes the tension here, and because retrograde Mercury is conjunct it, the question of where you hold back, what are the conditions that you place on the unconditional love of yourself, and that can include conditions on trusting yourself, conditions on being honest with yourself, because the retrograde Mercury, while it has an inner questing property, it also has a tendency to conceal. So I'm looking at the retrograde of Mercury conjunct Eris and Amor as a question whose time has arrived, and that is, what are the conditions you place on the unconditional love of yourself? That accounts for most of what is in Aries, certainly what is in this chart. And I think that the presence of Venus there is very telling, because when the planet that represents you is somewhere, you are close to that action. And in this case, that action is this profound inner transformational alchemy. That took 34 minutes. to explain, and we've covered mainly one house. But that's okay, because that's the story that informs everything else. That's the field of action where that's the fountain toward which from which everything flows, the font. Now, there's a lot of houses we could cover, but I want to call special attention to Pluto in the 10th. So the 10th is the house of action and the house of responsibility. It's also the house of formal leadership. It is the house of your reputation. And it is also the one where you not only express power, but relate to those in power. So it represents you as a parent, if you are one. It represents your parents when you're in the role of the kid. And so that that metaphor translates into all different levels and expressions in life. And to me, that Pluto in Aquarius in the 10th, which dipped in briefly last year, it's now there for about 8 months. It's going to dip back for about 10 weeks in the fall, and then it's going to be there till 2044, 20 more years. Long, long past the foreseeable future. This is more of the reluctant hobbit being called into action. It is more of the private person that you are being summoned by your own internal clock to take a role in the community, and there is tension between the visible nature of that role and the invisible nature of that role, and it is probable that you would rather have that role be invisible when you're going to need to declare your existence in some new way to your community and take on perhaps deep responsibility that I would say at this point in your lifetime you're ready for. And there's certainly been a lot of preparation and a lot of deconstructing previous ideas of power and authority and structure with Pluto and Capricorn. And now you are ready to express your Pluto as action, as evolutionary action. And one of the requirements here is going to be that you stand out from groups, that you differentiate yourself from the prevailing norms of society, which is getting harder and harder, and also that you be in some way inspiring or responsible for what I call group initiation, the need for the groups that you're in to grow as an entity composed of individual entities. And you have this internal growth fire burning hot. And so it's not really Pluto that is precipitating the action of your leadership. It's more emblematic of it, what is symbolizing the action of your leadership is the internal birth of very intense self-awareness. Okay, so let's talk about the conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus in your rising sign or birth sign. That's this looks like in the kind of microscopic picture. And here is more in the macroscopic picture. They're right where you live or where you think you live. What you mean when you say I am, usually. Because when you say I am, I know a lot of Tauruses. Oh, I understand you people in a strange way. When you say I am, you partly mean your first house, but you partly mean your second house. There is a sideband transmission. No matter how declarative you may be in your words, in your appearance, in your action, when you say I am, you are speaking in stereo, and you are speaking from the 12th and to the 12th and from the 1st and to the 1st. But most people don't know that this is going on. They're not aware of your very intense inner monologue that is going almost all the time to the point where it is difficult to step out of that and to just be in basic unified experience with yourself. This is not easy for you. But here we are. And you've got Chiron helping you make yourself whole. And then you've got the biggest fireworks display. In the modern history of Taurus. I mean, I could use a computer program and pull up my book by Neil Mickelson, bless his soul, which tells us about certain events. But to have the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction happen in your sign, particularly in the middle of all of this else that's going on, and there's plenty that I'm not going to get into in this reading, but we'll get into in other readings. But I'll give you the couple of clues you need. This is radically transformative of who you are. And you may think that it's transformative in terms of circumstances and appearances and some new freedom to say I am in a new way. But what's really going on is that these two massive planets that are currently occupying your sign and are about to form a conjunction on the day the sun enters Taurus, April 20th, 420, are really just expressing what's going on in the 12th house. So I would say, and I hope I made this point clearly enough and somewhere in between, that the place to go back to seek additional information is your internal feedback, because your internal feedback is what is powering everything that is going on. And the appearance is actually, while they may be rather bold and you find yourself in a whole new role that you had never even conceived of, you could never have possibly imagined, it's all coming from inside. But the conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus tells us about a massive expansion in your expressive potential. You have a lot of material to work with. But the thing to remember is, kind of like you can't hold Bitcoin in your hand, well, if you put it on a disk drive, you can, but the thing itself, that the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction is detached from reality and detached from expression if it's not connected to the eclipse in Chiron in Aries and Venus in Aries inwardly. So keep your direction of observation inward. Just a couple of more things. In terms of your public life, your seemingly public social life, right now, less is more. It is not the thing you want to encourage. I would propose that with Saturn present in Pisces in your 11th house of social affairs, that placing limits on your visibility is important. That does not mean to be invisible, but it means to be private, to honor your own privacy. And to not, though you, even if you suddenly mysteriously find the words, to not just randomly say what's going on with you. And it's not so much about the technical matters of privacy as it is about protecting the young growth and not watering down your ideas. And there is always a security element in terms of your ideas are your ideas, and they should only be expressed to yourself, your notebooks, and your necessary collaborators, but not as general currency. The presence of Saturn is saying that in all of these matters, less is more. And then there's the matter of Sedna. Sedna is going into your second place. And this deserves an article. Gemini as the second place of Taurus. And I will say simply that you may have figured out a couple of times that you're working with two value systems. And that they sometimes either conflict or one does not make sense from the point of view of the other. And Sedna's role is to help you integrate this dualistic, as in divided or in taking two forms, values structure. It is the equivalent of getting your whole brain working at once, with both hemispheres communicating with one another, rather than each doing their own thing, which they will do until you say, no, we're not two people in here, we're us, we're one. Well, that's plural. this too is a slow transit, and it may have its first expression in your discovery that you are working with two parallel value systems, each one not making sense to the other. And this is less about a matter of reconciling and more a matter of a third reality where your consciousness is working as one entity, and that you claim your subjective point of view. And when you say, I am, more and more you mean one thing instead of two things. I think that about covers it. Of course, there are other houses. We haven't talked about all these other houses, but I go over them in Somewhere in Between. That is more of a 12-house reading, and it's in written and in video. The videos are longer than these, and the written is brilliant. It's my best. It's the best astrology writing of my life. I'm now approaching 30 years since I bought this book on March 10th, this very book, March 10th, 1994. So this is when a person buys their ephemeris and they take it home and they start studying it, that's when you're an astrologer. And so for me, that was 3/10/94. I will tell the story of that day in another place, but I am happy that I still find this work to be interesting and worthwhile and beautiful. And I want to thank all the Tauruses in my life, including the ones I've never met, who are artists of various kinds who have helped shape me as an artist. And while I'm on that, let me just add a PS that from what I have seen, the work of the Taurus creators that I've seen is profoundly influential. It is enduring, and it spreads underground like the roots from a tree far and wide. And so I would encourage you to fully express whatever this bunch of events is about, because it kind of influences you more personally than any other sign, because if you look, you'll see it is all so close to who you are. I really want to try to convey this to you. The field of action, well, really what we're talking about is a field of action in your consciousness that is located right in the personal zone, the personal hotspot, and this includes dipping into Gemini. And so this location in your chart, this most personal, sensitive area of your chart, is the home of all of this. And so, you may feel like you're taking a ride flying on the back of a dragon or riding on a lightning bolt with circumstances and events developing in ways that are much quicker than you would normally want them to be, and yet that's just the way that it's going to be right now. So take that ride. Please send me a postcard. And this concludes the 12 sign readings of the Eye of the Centaur. One last one left. Chiron returned for Chiron and Aries, but not for now. So thank you. Thank you all. Everyone else watching this besides my Taurus friends and cousins, and lots of love. Bye for now.